Happy New Year, everybody. Our first person in the interview chair is Mrs. Thora Brown, all breed judge and ex-professional handler. Sit back and enjoy a conversation with Thora. Hi, everybody. Today I have a special guest, and it's Mrs. Thora Brown, all breed judge, ex-professional handler, ex-this. She has all kinds of lists on her accomplishments. To me, she's just mom. So, hi, mom.
Happy New Year, mom. Happy New Year, dear.
Things are well?
Things are very well. Had a nice, quiet Christmas. Talked to family. I've stayed socially distant from everybody. Wear my mask, wash my hands, do all those things.
And Mr. Brown?
He's excellent, as always.
Good, good. I'm going to get right into it. I want to find out how you got involved in dogs. I know you were basically born into them, so let's just start there. Right. Then you can actually give me background on your family, too. So.
My family were not dog show family. Okay. We always had a dog, but we lived in Toronto. I grew up in Cabbage Town.
Okay.
And so we never were in a position to have show dogs or more than just one. Maybe at one point I can remember when I was real little too, but it just wasn't a practicality. Mm-hmm. But I was a dog fan from, I can never remember not being one. When, I'm sure you remember the exhibition show, and the CNE, for those who don't know, held the end of August. Used to have a 5-day dog show, and it was held in the horse pavilion. And so the family outing to the X every year, we would go to the cow palace and look at all the cows, because I thought that was just intriguing, these creatures. And we'd look at horses, and we'd maybe wander through some of the social life buildings. And then when the family wanted to go off and look at cars and appliances and things that really didn't, I mean, I'm now talking, I'm 7, 8, 9 years of age. They would take me to the dog show, drop me off. Mother would take me up and sit me down or there. And I would spend the rest of the day in the dog show confines, unattached to an adult, while they went off and did their thing. And I would wander about and look at all these lovely creatures and pet the ones I could pet. And I had no idea how a dog show functioned, but I was surrounded by these great creatures. And I have a very, very clear memory of, I was 9 years old, watching what must have been a working group, because there were a number of large dogs in it. And there was this little old lady in my eyes, and she was wearing a gray wool sweater and a tam and a wool skirt and brogues. And she was showing a boxer. And I thought this was the most beautiful creature I had ever seen. I couldn't take my eyes off this boxer. And this little old lady, who in retrospect certainly didn't know how to handle, and the dog would just hit these poses that blew my mind. And I sat there thinking, if this little, I don't want to call her a bag lady, but as a child, I viewed her as just this little old woman, could have something that beautiful. One day I was going to have something that beautiful.
It wasn't Mrs. Whitmore, was it?
It wasn't. It predated Mrs. Whitmore. It was Jean Grant with Back Chatter Blossomly.
Okay.
So, which if boxer people will know the Blossomly name and Jean Grant and the lovely dog she had. And you know, Back, I think if I remember, here I am, I must admit, pushing my memory. I think Back Check was out of, Back something of Syracuse Crest. Oh. The name's just gone. Anyway, so that was what I aspired to, was something that to my little eyes was that beautiful. So somewhere around the age of 9 or 10, just shortly thereafter, I became enough of a pest to my parents that they broke down and bought what we hoped would be a show bulldog. We didn't get it from a big breeder. We bought him from a couple in Rexdale. But again, you would remember the Farrells. Albert and Etta Farrell were a major kennel, bulldog kennel. And this were people who had bought from them, and those were the lines. Anyway, it turned out our dear Beatty had a Dudley nose, which is a DQ. So there went my hopes of ever having a show dog, and we were not in a position to have another one. So the people we bought from were so sorry for poor little Thora, who had all her hopes on this creature. At the Barry Kennel Club show the following spring, and Barry was then the 24th of May weekend, held in Barry, they said, come to the show. Oh, I have great memories of the Barry show. Come to the show, and you can show, they had kept the little brother. They had him entered, and they said, you can take him in the ring. So my brother happened to be posted at Camp Borden then, so we tied a visit, because going to Barry was a major trip. A visit to my brother with this dog show. The mom and dad went off to visit brother, and I stayed at the dog show. And I did show their puppy, or the who would have been the brother to our dog. I don't have no idea what I did. I didn't win, I know that, but I couldn't tell you what or if I won the puppy class or whatever. But I met a whole lot of people. Albert and Anna Farrell were amongst them. And for whatever reason, Albert Farrell thought I was the cutest little thing going. And we became very good friends. And so over the next couple of years, I would go to shows in the immediate Toronto area with Albert. And Albert traveled with Eve Whitmore. And so they became my dog show parents.
Wow.
Yeah, it was quite the family. And my mom and dad were quite content to let me go off with Albert and Eve. And then through them, I became the pest at the dog shows. And I helped them out. And that's when I started. I can't say I apprenticed to or worked for, but I did work for Chuck Keel. I don't know if that name, that's predates you as well. Chuck was a poodle handler. And poodles.
How old were you then?
12. 13, I was just into high school, 13. Yeah. And so Albert and Eve would take me to the shows. I would travel. Occasionally, if mom had to, she would take me. And I would spend the weekend working for Chuck. And I was allowed to brush and X and clean up and do whatnot. Never allowed to put scissors on anything anywhere near. You didn't dare. I don't know if I ever even took anything. I must have taken things in the ring for him when he would be compromised. But anyway, and so I worked for him. And the other person that, again, I don't want to use the word I worked for, but assisted and helped, was Shirley DeBoer. And actually in preparing for this little thing, when as I said to you about people from that stage of my dog life, I'd forgotten, and I don't know how I could forget Shirley. If anyone ever knew her, Shirley was larger than life. Mm-hmm. Not easy to live, work for, I'll tell you. She, if you missed the mark, you were told about it. But I learned so much from her about care and maintenance of dogs, how to read a dog, and in some ways how to evaluate a dog. And I think if anybody, she's the one who gave me an eye for looking at a whole animal, not parts, not pieces. You can see the parts and the pieces, but it's when you put it all together and that overview. And she used to stand back and say, it was good, bad, or indifferent. She never tore it apart until you pressed her for details. And the other one, the same approach was John Royston, from whom we got our first Irish Setter. And John Royston and John McNichol were good friends, and they were two other dog people of that era that I hung around with. This 14, 15-year-old, 16-year-old kid was hanging around with all these breeders, and I would sit at ringside if I could and just listen and watch. And anyway, but the worst thing John Royston could ever say about a dog was that it was common. And that has stuck with me for so many years. Like, there are outstanding dogs, undoubtedly, and they're beautiful. And there are, as the AKC says, the less so. but there's that huge mass in the middle that are just plain common. They're not out, there's nothing really good, there's nothing really bad, they just are. And for John, and an Irish setter, I mean, what's worse than a common Irish setter? You know, and but when you take that, that applies in every breed. I had a long discussion once with someone about, can you call a bulldog elegant? Of course you can. You can call any dog elegant when it has all its breed traits and its breed pride and its breed essence is shining at you. That's elegance. So when it's common, it's just...
That's interesting, because John, for John to say that, because when I had a lot of meetings with Mr. Elders when I was younger, and he was sort of in the same ilk. He never said anything bad, and he would say, he always made me say three good things about dogs.
Yeah.
Yep. I think the worst thing I've ever heard him say was probably common. That's amazing.
Yeah. And I think maybe for people of that era, we talk about breed type and use fancier words, but it comes down to the same concept. The dog doesn't have true breed type. So his shoulders are a little straight. So if he's balanced, but he's got type, and he is an Irish setter. He stands there and is rollicking and joyful and has the proper, how long is his coat? Anybody can grow hair. We've seen that. I mean, we've lots of jokes about people could grow hair on a rock. Those are the things, but if the essence of the dog, the essence of the breed isn't there, you want a terrier who stands his ground, looks you in the eye, short back like a good stallion standing over his ground, he owns that. You want a Rottweiler who defies you to come and take the purse from off his neck. You know, you want that essence of breed. And yes, it's the shape of the this and the placement of the that and the proportions. But all of that has to make one global picture of the breed. And now I forgot what your question was. Oh, yes. So where did I go?
I enjoyed that.
My history. I worked for those people. Did a lot of ring stewarding when I was a kid because I couldn't travel far. And I wanted to be at the shows. And by this time I was moving into university and I needed money. And so back in the day, I got paid $25 a day to ring steward. And that was good money for me. And so I would do that. And then I started working for a number of kennels in the Toronto area on weekends. And that's how I met Alan indirectly. And I worked for, I worked for Alan's mom and dad, Tom Adams, Westy Kennel. Interestingly, the other Westy Kennel. I worked for the two big competitors. And I kennel sit over, they'd go off to the shows. And that was exposed me to a lot of different breeds.
Was one of the Dorothea's or no?
No, I didn't work for her. Ab K, that was the other one. Ab K and Tom Adams. So my stewarding and my kennel sitting and just sitting at ringside listening to people and being around shows in Toronto. And then we got married.
About how old were you when you two got married?
I was 20, just short of 21. But I'd finished university.
Baby.
I'd finished university, yeah. And decided he was that when we were getting married, he was stationed in Winnipeg. And so all our plans were to go out there. But then he got transferred back to Ottawa in April, the end of April that year. So that everything got blown up and we had to rearrange our lives. Anyway, so I came to Ottawa and got involved with the Ottawa Kennel Club. And through that started, we had one old cocker that Alan's mom had given me many years earlier. And when we lost her, we got Sheila, our first Irish. But we had become involved with the Ottawa Kennel Club, and I started showing for some people in the club, and that was how we started handling. And never did it as a full-time job. We were weekend handlers because we both had careers. And one of the things I had learned when I was working for other people's kennels, one was, how will I put this? Okay, one was I never wanted to run a boarding kennel. When I worked for ABK, or for Tom Adams, rather, he had a 100-dog boarding kennel. And you didn't stop from 7 in the morning till 7 at night, at least, with the care and looking after that many animals who had no idea why they were in a kennel. Dealing with the people was even harder. And I swore I would never. It is. With clients sometimes. And so I swore I would never have a boarding kennel. And then the other side of our dog, and this, when we got Sheila, we got her through John Royston. She was a stud puppy he got back from a lady named Rose Ionson, who bred Papillons.
I knew Rose Ionson.
Yes, and Rose's husband had Irish Setters. And he'd got, yeah, that's right. He'd gotten a bitch from John and bred to John's dog, and John was to get a puppy, and that was our Sheila. So John sold his bit. So we went down to pick Sheila up and bring her home. And while we were there, Rose said to us, would we like, she had a Papillon out at the time. And if I remember rightly, Elaine was showing it. The dog's name was Ziggy.
Oh yeah, Elaine showed
it. I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah. And so while we were there, Rose said, would you like to see Ziggy? Well, it wouldn't have been polite to say no thanks, who cares? But so we said yes, and I can still see the look on John Royston's face. It was like, no, Thor, you don't. And I thought, by now I'd said yes. So we go from the Irish Setter kennel across through a walkway into her Papillon kennel. Now, both kennels were spotless, beautifully built, the state of the art of the day.
Georgetown, I remember it.
That's right. She opened the door, and the noise was deafening. She must have had 100 Papillons in this kennel. And they were in boxes, like three high, filled the wall, and three sides of the room had these boxes. And there were three or four Papillons in each one of these. And they're all yapping, and it was just mayhem. I then understood why John didn't want to go in there. And so she walked into to the center of the room, and she stood there. Ziggy, Ziggy, where are you, Ziggy? Tell mommy where you are. I want to show you. Ziggy, where are you? And they're all going crazy. And she opened a box, took this Papillon out, brought it over. This was Ziggy. I patted it on the head, said, isn't this sweet? And I swore then I would never, ever have a kennel where I didn't know every dog by name, every dog by sight, and every dog didn't get touched and loved and looked after every day.
Yeah.
That I would never have that kind of box kind of situation. So having said that, so we kept our operation fairly small. We were both working, and I had these tenants that I wouldn't forsake, that I had to, my dogs had to be part of. And you can imagine, Irish Setters don't get loved and kissed. And anyway, so I splurged by showing other people's dogs, and we were relatively successful at it. And so then we, careers both took off. We both were working hard. Things were going really well. And we had reached a point really where we had to commit one way or another. What were we going to do doggy-wise or career-wise? And career won out. And so we sort of cut back on that. And that's when in 1980, we made the decision to retire from handling and move to judging. And so in 82, I judged.
That's early.
I finished up my book. Yeah, I started judging in 82.
What year was Mr. being shown?
Late 70s.
Oh, it was okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure exactly, but late 70s, yeah.
That's my first name.
From there, excuse me. And so on we went from there.
You obviously started in the sporting group. It's funny that you talked about the toy kennel and whatnot, because I think you're very good at toys, but I guess it doesn't matter about how noisy they can be in the kennel, right? But I want to judge toys, and I you look so comfortable judging toys.
I'm actually quite comfortable judging just about anything now. I will admit, my greatest trepidations as I moved into new groups were terriers. I think for anybody from outside the terrier world, they really are intimidating.
Oh, for sure. But I'm just saying that because I'd be at ringside and toy people would be talking how much they look forward to showing to you. And I'm like, well, she's a nice person. But
thank you. I did sporting, non-sporting, hounds, working, and herding. The year I did working, there was the split. So working, herding, toys, and I did terriers last.
So we talked about a few of your earlier on mentors. Who would you consider? Do you have more mentors to talk about, or do you?
Well, let me look at my list. John, Shirley, Chuck. It's Eve Whitmarsh, without any doubt. I was just thinking when we were talking about clubs, those first years, we joined the Scarborough Kennel Club. And the meetings were all held at Stan and Eve's home up on Highway 7 in their family room. And I have this memory, and when I talked about Shirley is what brought it back. Shirley was a member, Shirley and Ben, and I have this memory of Shirley and Stan Whitmore, nose to nose arguing over a dog. And it was just hilarious because Stan couldn't get two words in. And Shirley was, and again, if you knew those who knew Shirley, how dynamic she was, and powerful and forceful. And she was just into him for everything. And I just stood there sort of with my mouth open. Oh my God, thank God that's not me.
We went to a few, when I was going to shows with Gary and whatnot, and Brian, we'd have dinner the odd time with Shirley. And she overpowered the table. Like you couldn't.
Oh. Yeah.
I can understand what she'd do to Stan.
I had the honor once of being able to walk Shadrach.
Oh, wow.
Back from a ring she had. Very rarely did she let somebody else take Shadrach. And but I can't remember what the situation was. And take him back. And so, I'm so happy. Joey Natras was an influence in my young days. I found out that my best girl... Sorry?
How did you meet Joey? The dog shows, obviously, but...
Yeah, she was at Scarborough Kennel Club, probably.
Oh, there you go.
And she was showing chows, and I was showing bulldogs. My best friend in high school was her niece.
Oh, small world.
And I didn't know it until one time during high school, something came up, something for a Friday night or a Saturday, and I said, no, I couldn't go. I was babysitting. And my girlfriend said to me, oh, where, something about who was I sitting for? I said, oh, it's a dog woman, a dog friend, because the kids in high school, I got teased a lot for the dogs. And I said, a dog friend. And she said, oh.
You're the dog.
Yeah. I said, she lives out on whatever, somewhere in Scarborough. Let me think of it. It doesn't matter. And Barbara said, what's her name? And I said, Natras. And she said, not Joey and Dick. And I went, yes. And she said, that's my aunt and uncle. And so I used to babysit Joey Natras's son.
Wow.
And that was how that, so I knew them through that. And so I've had Chow sit on my lap. Joey imported a blue dog from England. God, well, I was in high school. And I had a blue Chow sit on my lap. He was the biggest, soppiest, unchow-like creature. He was just adorable. And two other people who, I won't call them true mentors because I didn't know them a lot as a kid, but you couldn't miss their presence at Canadian dog shows, were Bill and Nigel. Mm-hmm. And again, when I moved to Ottawa, of course, I saw a lot of them in Montreal. But I can remember the old Sportsman show. If Bill and Nigel were there, and as a kid, going stay near them and just listen to them, try and listen. And even over the years, once I started judging, Nigel was he was a good friend. And they weren't intimate friends, but good friends. And I knew I was okay if Nigel came and talked to me. If he didn't talk to me, I knew he was mad. Because I think nothing made Nigel happier than to niggle at people. And if he knew he could get you upset, he'd do it and delight in it. So I always knew if he came over after I judged and we chatted, things were okay. He might have a comment, but at least we were okay. If he didn't talk to me, we weren't okay. Oh. Yeah, and I was happier at that point. But those were sort of the big influences. Were Albert, Netta, Eve, the John Royston, John McNichol, Shirley, yeah.
Did you have any judging mentors after you decided to start judging that you sort of started asking questions to and guidance? Well, obviously you must have had a mentor. Did you have to have a mentor back?
No, you didn't. I think it was more people I observed than anybody I actually talked to. Although the one person, and this may sound strange, do you remember Joe Fagel?
Oh, I love Joe Fagel, yes. One of my very favorite. When I was a kid, oh my God.
Yeah, he was, and for as strange as it sounds, I met Joe Ringstory in, it would have been one of the Toronto shows he came up, and we became Uncle Joe.
Yeah,
I probably talked more to him about judging, and that sounds really strange that he was, I only saw him on rare occasions. I never phoned him, I would never write him, but when he was around, I would definitely go and talk. And he instilled things. I mean, one of the things he always said to me was, the end of the day, there's only one person you have to please, and that's yourself. You know, you have to, I remember this, you have to be able to go back to the hotel, look in the mirror and say, I did good. And that's has stuck there, that I don't care how angry everybody else gets about what I do. I have to be content with what I did, that it was the right thing for me on the day, and I don't care who you are or what your dog has done. I have excused top winning dogs for limping and been yelled at by people. You can't do that. Excuse me, I can't not do it.
Right.
Exactly. You know, if I allow a lame dog to go to a group, well, they'll give it a shot, it'll be okay in the group. No! I've had that said to me.
Oh, really?
No, that's wrong. Wrong. And anyway, so yeah. So I have to be true to myself.
Well, that was good advice. As a child, I showed him, and he always was so fun to show to, and he always gave me a dollar when I showed dogs to him. And I have a...
Sweetheart.
I have a cast iron Boston Terrier that his granddaughter gave me. So I cherish.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because I was always he was just so good to me when I was a kid. Yeah. Off topic, sort of. It reminded me. He brought back a memory.
One other person that I did talk to a lot, and again, it was more on a casual basis than sort of an organizing. It was Shirley Limoges. Mm-hmm. I always admired Shirley.
Yeah.
Her judging, her style, her presence.
Oh, for sure.
And
the lady out there.
The way she can handle any situation. And there were some where I, you know, in the early days, you need somebody to bounce things off. And she was always a good person to talk to.
She was, and she's like that, yeah. The show too. She was just, she commands respect out there, so.
Yeah, you know, and she's very easy to talk to once you can sit down with her.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've obviously done, you're very successful. You're president of the CDGA?
I was, yeah. I had 3 terms I served. I'm not now. Current president is Bob Robottom.
Oh, okay. And you've been into CKC politics as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That on the board. Can I touch on those things? You want to stay away?
It has its highs and its lows. Yeah. Dog people also attack CKC. And CKC, yes. I was a director for Eastern Ontario. I was chair of the board for a while. I'm still on the number of committees, mostly the ROE committee, which is requirements for eligibility for registration. And that's a government mandated thing. That's right. Okay. Yes, I have served on CKC. And it has its highlights. It's certainly rewarding. Yeah. But the I do get frustrated with the way a lot of dog people attack CKC without realizing what goes on down there, that they seem to think it's their own private little registry and division that they should be, everything should be right there. There's a whole lot of complicated things, and being part of Ag Canada is great, but it also has drawbacks in that they impose restrictions that, like these ROEs, which are not easy to get in place, but we're working on it.
As your time being the president of the CJA, what advice would you give? Well, first of all, how do you feel about the judging process right now? How it's going? Is there pros and cons?
I'm still of the opinion that having 10 years experience is too little to think you, because I know of people, and I mean, we've all heard them, I've been in dogs for 8 years, two more and I'll be a judge. You don't even know what you don't even know. And so I would like to see it longer. I don't think that will ever come to be. I think that there are too many who will fight it. The same thing with, I listened to some of our permit judges, people who have great potential, but want to be an all-around judge in 3 years. Not there. There's just too much to learn.
Right, exactly.
And so basically, I think in some ways our system's much better than other countries I've been to and talked to judges there about where they can become an Aubrey judge in 18 months, and it shows. So I think that there's... basically, our system works.
I remember having a conversation, I won't say with who, was a judge from out of country, obviously. He was very young, and we were discussing something. And I tend not to lose my temper. I try not to. But I told him I had been to more dog shows than he's been to. So, yeah. But that wasn't
very... That's, and it's true.
Yeah.
But it is true. And when you watch some of them, when I'm judging in foreign countries, if I get a chance to watch somebody else and just see, maybe it might be a face you might want to bring home. And very often, they're not ready to leave home yet. And it shows in their approach to animals, and not even in their choices, but just their approach and their behavior in the ring. And just that generally, it really does take time to master seven different groups, seven different concepts. Exactly. And your own background. Interesting article I read just recently, how your own background forms your approach to different breeds. And, coming from a sporting dog, am I always looking for that nice, long, easy gait, and do I appreciate that a terrier doesn't move like a setter? And that's very true. And you stop me thinking about it. It does. Like, there are certainly absolutely things that I love to see, but I have to tell myself a pug is not a retriever, and you have to appreciate both of them.
That's true. That all being said, what advice would you give to someone that aspires to be a judge?
Shut your mouth and listen.
That's a lot of advice, a lot of things.
That's great. Get out and see. That's another thing that frustrates me no end, when I hear people wanting to start judging and they've never been to a show more than 100 miles from their home. They've never gone to their own national specialties, let alone a different breed's specialty. They've never had sessions, mentoring sessions with anybody in another breed. I think now with online has been wonderful, that you can have breed sessions from your own living room, which is great to be able to watch. And the AKC ran that whole series. I think they may still be doing them, their webinars.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching a lot of them at the beginning of the COVID thing. They were mid-afternoon, and it was convenient. They have moved them to 5 o'clock, at least 5 o'clock my time. And I can't sit down for an hour and a bit at 5 o'clock in the afternoon every day to watch a webinar. I know they're stored, and I have gone and looked at them, but that's made a great difference. But when I talk to people who have a pointer and don't stay to watch the retrievers, and then want to get a judging license,
right?
What are you basing this on? The fact that you have one dog that you finished through whatever you need now, that does not a judge make.
I agree. I think they just see that. I think they think it's a glamorous life, so they want to do that part of it.
Yeah. There's something they need to learn the realities of. It's not glamorous. That's the one thing I have to say with COVID. And so I've been home. This is the longest I think we've ever been home for all of us without a show. And my suitcase is covered in dust. But God, you know, it's nice not getting on a plane. And I keep thinking about being squished in Air Canada again and running down a concourse in Chicago to make my connecting flight and all these other things. I'm not missing that at all.
Sure. So we've talked to you. You've had bulldogs. You've had whippets. You've had Irish setters. You've had cockers, English cockers, right?
English. Actually, we did own a couple of Americans, but that was kind of in passing.
What is your favorite breed?
Oh, well, I saw that question.
Yeah. One, isn't it? Yeah. I think we all have a few, so that we...
Yeah, I mean, I cannot say that big red dogs have such a special place in my heart. I would be lying to everybody if I didn't say that Irish setters come first and foremost. If I were in a position now to maintain coat and all those things, I'd have another one in a heartbeat. It just is not one rule we made. I won't call it a rule. I've always said when I only had house dogs, I want house dogs I like to look at. I wouldn't want an Irish setter. I couldn't keep one cut down. We never cut Chance down. I trimmed him up a bit. The same with Giorgio. They were in show coat their whole lives.
Just anything to be, right?
Like... Exactly. If I had a poodle, I would cut that down. I wouldn't keep it, but I would keep it maybe a step above. If I were into having a standard poodle, an elaborate cut down coat. What else do I love? Whippets, and they've certainly wormed their way into my life. What's special to me?
Ingies have to be there. You've judged nationals.
Oh, yes, of course. Excuse me. How could I forget? Oh, thank you. I apologize to all the English Cocker people. So there we,
That's what
I like terriers, but I don't.
Cockers.
That's right, with your blue dog. Maid of Ale. Something.
Yep.
Fire Brigade. Yes. Yeah. Big blue
you
dog.
You taught me how to trim feet. I don't know if you remember that.
I do, yes. And I taught you how to bath a dog on the table, to touch him up on a grilling table.
Yep, I remember.
For those who don't know, Will used to come and hang around me.
I think one time I got
him in the camera
here and you guys took me in to look after me. I forget what happened there.
That's right.
But something. Yeah. You made me dinner in your trailer.
That's right. Eggplant Parmesan.
Yeah.
Yes.
I still love it to this day. That was my first time.
There you go.
That was like 12, I think. 11 or 12.
Yeah. That was a long time ago.
Yep.
God. Dobermans have a special place. I've never owned one, but there's something about a Doberman that draws me to them. And boxers. Back to Gina and whatnot.
Halloween thing,
boxers. Yeah. Yeah.
Are there dogs? You've judged a lot of dogs over the years and seen a lot of dogs over the years. Without talking about current dogs, are there dogs that stick in your memory that you'll be judging that breed and all of a sudden you'll refer to your memory bank, that one dog?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me those dogs? I just don't want current dogs, that's all.
No. One that has, and I don't, you might know her, an Abethan hound named Bunny.
Oh, of course.
I saw her in California whenever it was, and I was doing the breed. I wasn't doing the group. I was doing the breed. And I had maybe 10 or 12, and at the time, that was a big entry of them. And I stood there going, where on earth did this come from? She's one that that's the image that I carry with me. Jimmy Moses and a shepherd bitch. I mean, there's this, an image that, that sits in my head. A Chesapeake Bay Retriever in Colombia, in South America, bred by somebody in, I want to say in Maryland. It was an American bred dog anyway that they'd imported, that I think was the most gorgeous Chesapeake I've ever seen. Wire Fox Terrier in Brazil, that was one, was shown by Racera, belonged to the South American gentleman who owns so many beautiful dogs. It was an English import.
Oh, a Travella dog, yes.
Yeah. And there's the, again, terriers really have to, this sounds awful, to say that they have to be above, well above average to get to me. This dog just walked in the ring and went, bam. And Racera just puts him down so beautifully. And this one really got my eye. If I could remember his name, I would tell you, but there you are. Another dog, and this isn't even a breed that we recognize here. I was doing a best in show in France, and this sporting group winner came in, a Brocco Italiano. And I stood there and I couldn't believe, I mean, what do I know about Brocco? But this went around the ring and he was spectacular, just spectacular. Anyway, I gave him best in show and turned out he was a top winning something or another in Europe and had done this and that and the other thing, which meant nothing. He just, and if we ever recognize him, that's the dog I want. Coco Chanel, the Whippet Chanel.
Oh, yes.
I had her at Devon, and she came in for best in show, and what else? I'm trying to,
The wow factor there.
Yeah. And they, like all of these are, when I'm thinking of them now, these are dogs that I don't have a vision of a handler behind them. These dogs came in and stood there all on their own and said, me.
Except for Jimmy.
Yeah, that's right. Excuse me.
We can't help
it. I know. And there are many others that stand out like that, but yeah.
Well, that's part of the fun part about judging, I'm sure.
Yeah. And that's the nice thing about judging around the world. Oh, I had a Borzoi bitch in Japan. Need I say more? She came in the ring and it was like, wow.
I think we all saw her, didn't we?
We did, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, she had that wow factor, no question.
Yeah.
Dog show people that have passed, who, if you could have dinner with, say, two of them, who would you choose?
I need a bigger table than two.
Okay, make tables as big as you want.
Who would I like to chat with again? Bill Taylor.
Yeah.
Jane Forsyth. Mike Billings. Skip Stanbridge. Put him at the top of the table.
Yeah. He just sit there.
Yeah. And again, Skip he was very entertaining and he had lots of stories. But there was always something there more than just an interesting story. There was, if you listen and you kind of directed the conversation, there was lots there. Yeah. Dick Mean, Dick and I would go out for dinner when I was on the board. He was the chair my first term. And then the second term he had retired. And very often when I was in Toronto, Dick and I would go out for dinner and great. I miss talking to Dick a whole lot. Who else? Did I say Mike Billings?
Yeah.
Interesting. I judged at Kitchener, I believe. Yes, it was Kitchener a number of years ago. Myself, Mike Macbeth was on the panel, as was Mike Billings, Jane Forsyth. And that made a very interesting dinner table. Yes. Who else?
It can be a huge list, I'm sure. So.
Yeah, I had trouble with that one because I started getting misty thinking about some people.
Yeah.
So I jumped over that question.
And we talked about advice for aspiring judges. And you wore many hats, but you also wore the hat of a handler. What about advice for young handlers? What would you give them if they wanted to start?
Be honest.
Shut up and listen.
That applies to them too. Actually, very much so. Learn to shut up in the ring.
Yeah.
I have to admit I'm appalled sometimes by some of our young handlers and their behavior. They need to learn about manners and being polite and snatching ribbons and muttering under their breath let's talk about entitlement. No, let's talk about doing some work and presenting a dog. Know the breed you're showing. That some breed, not all breeds are meant to be raced around the ring, but this applies to so many exhibitors. Mm-hmm. And that you're there to show the dog, not yourself. I'll leave it at that.
that's enough. Need to know all those things and take their.
It really is. Know the breed you're showing. That at least read the breed standard. Once or twice, I have made comment to some young handlers about dogs they've brought in with something perhaps less than correct, and have made a comment about thinking I'll be nice and help and point something out, and they get all harumphy.
Yeah.
And it's not even, I'm not giving them a personal opinion. If the breed standard says certain things, you know, like at least have read the breed standard.
Know that.
Yeah. There's, showing a dog is not just taking the lead. God, you know this. It's not just taking the lead and running around a ring.
No, that's the smallest part of it all, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. And know your judges. I'll never forget once I was in Buffalo and you were there and I was doing American Cockers and oh dear, his name's gone from me. American Handler, I can't remember right now. I had a huge class of Buff Ascob specials. And this guy was first in line. And this was a dog that was doing reasonable winning in the States. But he was a very big cocker. He was not of my type. And there were others there that pleased me more. And he was pulling up the ears and pushing the tail and showing me the top line and flipping and doing and pushing. And you were outside the ring standing behind him. And you leaned, I was down as I went down the line, excuse me. You leaned over and said something to him. He got all red and flustery and off you went. So and I saw you later. I said to you, what did you say to, the name's not coming to me. And he said, I just told him he didn't have a prayer that you wouldn't like his dog. And you were so right, exactly. Know your judge. Know what they like about in a certain breed. You know, what they'll tolerate, what they won't tolerate.
Of course.
That's part of your job as well.
There's no question.
No point showing me whatever. I don't know. People must know I think I like something.
I have one last question for you before I take
it. Okay.
If you could meet the 20-year-old Thora Brown, what advice would you give her now?
Oh. So many things. I'd looked at this and that was very interesting. Number one, I wouldn't change a thing. I have had a most rewarding life. I have met so many wonderful people. I've had a tremendous marriage. I have been rewarded in my career, in my doggy life, in my personal life. So many things that I have to be so grateful for. What would I tell myself? Try and stay healthier, which without changing the events of my life, probably would be a wise thing to think about. I don't know if I be a little more tolerant, maybe, of certain behaviors in other people. I do have a low tolerance for certain things.
And maybe they make it difficult.
Yeah, try anyway. I found it hard. What would I tell myself? It's all going to get better. You will live through it. You will find resolution. Do not panic over the small. Yeah, do not panic over the small things in life. What to me, when I was 25, I thought my life was coming to an end over, or I was going to be irrevocably marked by past in the night. In terms, I look back now and it was like whoopee ding.
Yeah.
And but that's only the perspective of 40 years later being able to say, we just survived it all. And yeah, that's what life's about. We have all the bumps and the bumps, and we get through it, and it's what you make of those things. Were I to think back on major changes, probably only two major things I would ever think of reviewing, but in both of them, my life would have been completely different. One would have taken me out completely away from dogs, completely away from that whole thing. I would have had a different career, probably not gotten married. It would have been just a whole different world.
Turn.
Would it have been better? I have no idea. Just different. Can I say I did it wrong? No, I didn't. Have I made some strange decisions here and there? Sure. But they were okay. And life's good.
I can tell.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
I funny. Am happy.
That movie that we all just watched, It's a Wonderful Life.
Do you know I've never seen that movie?
What's that?
I've never seen that movie.
You've never seen that movie? With everything you just said, you've never seen that movie. You should watch it.
Yes. I want to watch it. Every time I look at it, yes. Anyway, yes. It's great. It's awful. Anyway, I'm sorry. I interrupted you.
No, but it talks about decision-making. If you didn't do this, yeah, what would be there? And it's just, I think it's, like, I look at my own life and think, if you'd taken that turn instead of this turn, you wouldn't be here. You'd be there. God knows what would be happening. I'm happy certain things here,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, Alan and I will be married 53 years this in June.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And when I look at the dog show world, we deserve 3 medals. I wouldn't trade that for anything. And it's been a joint effort. We do share dogs. And I think that's been really important. We both shared sincere involvement in our careers. He's a photographer, was in the military, left that when he finished his work there, and went into the National Archives of Canada. So he's a history fanatic, and so he got to do both things with Canadian history and photography and so on. I did my teaching and my languages and those things. And then we got the icing on the cake that we could do our doggy life on the side.
Yeah, like, so we see one without the other, so.
Yeah, like, it's just been things have been very good for us. Life has been good. And we've got wonderful people like you and all the dog people that we've gotten to know. Well, I guess I met you in
75 or 6 or somewhere around.
Yeah, okay.
Probably 75, because I remember being at the Ottawa Dog Show in 75, so probably.
Okay. Yeah, I remember your dad showing Olaf.
Yeah. When did Rosa Einstein?
That's right. And I think that's when I met you, was trailing along behind.
Yep.
And then you got the English Cocker a year or two later.
Yeah, I got the English Cocker. We went to get a dog for Mr. E, and Mrs. E gave me Briggs.
Briggs, yes. Yeah.
That's when I had other dogs before that, but that's when I got more competitive and I got to go against you.
And Mister.
Yep.
Who else was out then? Carrie had a dog.
Down there on Blue Peter. Yep.
That's right. And the lady from Kent fell up here with the Reds.
Amy.
Nora. Amy. Oh,
Nora. Nora. Yes. Nora. You're right.
Nora Maltby with Reds. Yeah.
No, what you said. Amy Honey was thrown in there somewhere.
Yes. Yes. She came along a little bit later. She had something from Carrie, if I recall correctly. Oh, that's where she started.
Yeah. Now we're on English Cockers.
Anyway, other people don't know all this. Anyway, there you go. Have I answered all your questions?
Yes. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
I can't wait to see you.
I'm sometime, sure. Hopefully in 2021.
Yes.
It will be in 2021. Somewhere.
Give Mr. Brown my best. And
I shall indeed.
Thank you so much for your time and have a happy new year.
Happy new year to you too.
Right, Mom.
Okay.
Great to see you.
Now what?
We'll say goodbye. Okay. I love you.
I love you too, dear.
Well, thank you, Thora. It was great to see you and catch up. If you like what we're doing here, make sure you press the like, share, and subscribe button. If you want to get a hold of me and ask me questions, go to dogshowtips@gmail.com. Or if you just want to find out what's happening in Will's world, go to willalexander.net. Until next time.